This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is out this week. I'm Bob Garfield. With 6 weeks till Election Day, let's do the numbers.
This new poll out today shows Trump and Biden tied in the battleground state of Florida.
Since March, Joe Biden has held at least 83 virtual fundraisers.
The Trump campaign tells Politico it knocked on over 1 million doors in the past week alone. Joe Biden's campaign says it knocked on zero doors.
A new CBS News battleground tracker poll shows the president trailing Biden in Minnesota 50% to 41%.
Between Joe Biden and Senator Kamala Harris, they hosted four virtual fundraisers on Monday, bringing in around $10.5 million combined.
It all sounds so normal. To a fault, the latest manifestation of the media's normalizing of Donald Trump. Till now, that meant bending over backwards in deference to the stature of his office and the voters' will to depict, for example, his most mundane acts in the soft light of presidential grandeur.
Ryan died as he lived, a warrior and a hero, battling against terrorism and securing our nation.
He became president of the United States in that moment.
What changed last night?
I think Donald Trump became president of the United States. I think this was actually a big moment.
Worse still, discussing his most aberrant acts and statements as if they were legitimate policy issues. And then there's editing out distractingly outrageous or dishonest or inarticulate rhetoric, lest they drown out the supposed real news. But what if the very process of covering the 2020 election were creating a Potemkin village of normalcy in which the very nuts and bolts of political reporting have the effect of diluting the most crucial truth at the most crucial time? George Washington University Media and Public Affairs Professor Dave Karp is watching ruefully as the press engages in business as usual.
There's a way that you cover elections in September and October. It assumes that the campaign is happening in normal times. And it's a focus on what the latest polls tell us. It's a focus on what states are the candidates visiting, how is their door knocking going, what are the campaigns telling us based on their internals, what's the latest thing that happened at a rally.
Those kinds of stories you mentioned, they're not unilluminating necessarily. I mean, if you're interested in the ebb and flow of political fortunes, they do matter, do they not?
They matter, but they matter less in 2020 than they do in a 2016 or a 2012. There was a moment from 2012, a reporter shouting out to Mitt Romney,
"Governor Romney, do you feel that your gaffes have overshadowed your foreign trip?"
That was the news of the day. Today, we have those similar stories. You know, there can be a story about whether or not Joe Biden, like, flubbed some line in a recent speech. But again, at issue here is those things only matter if they are being transmitted to an electorate that is all going to be able to vote. And since we also have this storyline about how not just the Trump campaign, but the entire administrative state, it seems, is being leveraged in order to make our elections less free and less fair.
Do you believe, as the Attorney General of the United States, that mail-in voting will lead to massive voter fraud?
I think there's a high risk that it will.
There are those in power who are doing their darndest to discourage people from voting by closing polling locations and targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws.
That seems like the much more central story. What matters isn't what advertisement is going on the air. What matters is how many ballots are going to get invalidated.
We're living in bizarro world and treating it as ordinary world. And therefore abdicating our journalistic responsibility. Is that a fair characterization of your Spilkes?
That's pretty fair. I mean, back in 2016, the journalist Selena Zito coined the phrase that Donald Trump's voters take him seriously but not literally, and reporters take him literally but not seriously. And then over the past 4 years, we all learned that you have to take him both seriously and literally. And the challenge for reporters now, and for their assignment editors, is Trump is going out and giving speeches where he says,
"The only way we're going to lose this election is if the election is rigged. Remember that. It's the only way we're going to lose this election."
Roger Stone saying that they should just seize all of the ballots from the state of Nevada.
"We can prove voter fraud in the absentees right now. Send federal marshals to the Clark County Board of Elections, Mr. President. It's all there."
It's hard to take that literally because it's so out of the boundaries of how we're used to covering campaigns. And it doesn't line up well with the latest story that we also want to hear about, you know, what does Gallup or Rasmussen say about who's leading in Florida or in Pennsylvania or another swing state? So that means that if you're talking about the latest polling numbers out of Florida, you also need to note the recent court case that is going to strip something like 700,000 Florida citizens of their right to vote.
You're referring to the case where the former felons who had been stripped of the right to vote had the voters restore it, but then the Republican state officials created a de facto poll tax. They had to pay back fees and fines and so forth in order to be eligible. A court upheld that administrative ruling.
Yeah, that's pretty crucial there. You also need to talk about how there are active questions about whether or not all ballots will be counted. While we're going to cover some fundraising numbers, we're going to cover some polling changes, you also need to be covering things like foreign election interference. You know, news is covering it. They're just not incorporating that into their normal election coverage. So they need to cover that. They need to cover the Postal Service. They need to cover the legal challenges that are happening in swing state after swing state, where Republican elected officials mostly are trying to make it harder for people to vote amidst COVID. The state of Texas, which isn't usually a swing state but is looking swingier, they've decided that if you're older than 65, you can vote by mail. And if you're younger than 65, since younger people tend to vote Democrat, that you can't vote by mail without much stronger excuses. That's an extraordinary and odd decision. And the outcome of the election in Texas is going to hinge more on whether or not everyone is able to equally cast a ballot than on what the latest ad strategy from either of the candidates is.
There is this logic trap that the media have been ensnared in. For decades, the political right has claimed a left-wing bias in the press, and now comes Trump. And by merely reporting the facts, the press is accused of, aha, providing the smoking gun of their bias, not only of bias, but of being an enemy of the people. How much of this routine coverage do you attribute to the media just trying to seem like a neutral observer of political events by, you know, sticking to business as usual?
Marty Baron from the Washington Post said early in the Trump administration that, you know, Trump says that he's at war with us, we're not at war, we're at work. On one level, I get it, and that's a clever phrasing. And on another level, if someone declares war on you, then you are at war with them. Trump has been actively at war with the media for 4 years now, probably five. And I don't think the American media has been equipped, because we have no context for reporters and media organizations being actively at war with the administration because the administration has decided to be at war with them, because the administration has decided that they're such good villains for it. The toolbox of responding to that, you know, they've had to develop it as they go because we don't really have a toolbox. But I think it does require understanding that Trump is going to cast CNN as the villain no matter what CNN does. So CNN can try to do their job well, but CNN also needs to focus on, okay, if he's going to treat us as villains, we need to also defend ourselves as CNN.
What about the electorate? What about the news consumers? What responsibility is in our hands?
I don't really center a lot of responsibility on news consumers. I think people should be careful about their information sources. Misinformation is only growing, and Facebook and others have not been doing a great job of handling it. So you should be careful about what information you're consuming and what information you're sharing. But beyond that, I really would center agency on news organizations and their editorial decisions. I understand the impulse to say, hey, there's a new raft of polls out. Tell me about the polls. There's something almost heartwarming and comforting about following the horse race in 2020 as though it was 2018 or 2016 or any normaler times. I don't want to blame any news consumer who would like an ounce of normalcy in 2020. That means that the responsibility is, in fact, on the media. It's on journalists, it's on their editors to make sure that they are contextualizing the normal reporting campaign beat with all of the other things that are going on in this election that are abnormal and probably have a much larger impact on the outcome.
Dave, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Dave Karp is a professor in the School of Media and Public Affairs at George Washington University. Coming up, the Netflix movie Cuties is denounced as child pornography.
But what's also shocking was the media's just blatant defense of the film, of course. You always protect anything bordering on pornography.
Nope. This is On the Media.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.